Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, some of Iowa's newest athletes compete using only their brains and their thumbs. Esports are coming to a high school near you. I'll talk with esports coaches from Wayland and Waterloo. But first, Tai Chi is an ancient Chinese tradition that is bringing relief to Iowa veterans. This hour, we'll learn about Tai Chi and how it's helping veterans cope with anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, and a host of physical ailments. We'll meet veterans who've embraced the practice and Tricia Yu, creator of the Tai Chi Fundamentals Program. And my first guest is Lori Enlow, a physical therapist and Tai Chi instructor with the Iowa City VA Hospital. Hello, Lori.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you for being here. Tell me when you first encountered Tai Chi.
I first encountered Tai Chi probably in the early 80s. I was at a women's retreat and they were offering it as a morning exercise. But I really got started in the early 90s. I started taking classes that were being offered at our church.
All right. And when did the idea of using it in conjunction with physical therapy occur to you?
Well, actually, almost immediately, because at the time I was working in a vestibular disorders clinic at the University of Iowa with people with balance dysfunction. And so even as I was learning the really basic fundamental movements of Tai Chi, I started using it with my patients.
Interesting. Now, for people who aren't familiar with Tai Chi, take me a little bit farther. We know it's an ancient Chinese practice. Maybe an image comes to mind, but tell me more about Tai Chi.
Well, it's really it's a multi-component mind-body exercise. And one of the key things, it is mind-body, so you're integrating the whole body as you're learning this art. And it's part of an Asian tradition of martial arts, Chinese philosophy, and Chinese medicine. And it really embraces the idea of the slow-moving meditative movement that helps strengthen the body, helps develop balance, helps build endurance. And so it's something that can be practiced by anyone. And go ahead.
When you practice Tai Chi, give me an idea of how long you would normally do it. And do you need to have an instructor?
Well, when you first start out, I think it's really beneficial to have an instructor because they can guide you through the movements. They can also help you learn to adjust your body, because a lot of times when we're first learning something new, we might not be aware of what our alignment is. One of the big things that Tai Chi does is it teaches us postural alignment. And sometimes when we're starting something new, we're not even aware that we're locking a knee or we're standing on the side of our foot. So it's actually very helpful to have someone guide you through that process. And when you're just starting out and practicing, sometimes what I tell people is even starting out with, like, say, 5 minutes a day. So it doesn't have to be a long period of time. You might start out practicing just 5 minutes to learn some really basic fundamental movements. And one of the things about Tai Chi is that there's many different forms. There's 5 main families, but all of those forms all follow some basic fundamental principles. And that's, the choreography may be different, but the fundamental principles are what we actually really focus on when I'm teaching right now.
How long have you been teaching Tai Chi to veterans?
I've been teaching Tai Chi to veterans for about the last 5 years when I first started at the VA. I came in and I brought Tai Chi. I mean, I had developed the program at our Iowa City VA, so
all
I brought
right.
it in.
And you were part of the MOVE weight loss program, but I get the sense, and we will talk to a number of veterans who've embraced this practice, this is about a lot more than physical exercise and weight loss. So as you started working with veterans and Tai Chi, tell me what you were seeing.
What I really saw is people started to become more aware. The veterans started becoming more aware of their bodies. And sometimes when you say the word physical activity or exercise, people kind of put up the, oh, I don't like that. But what this is it's an integrative movement. And so they were really finding and discovering something that was enjoyable for them. I had one veteran who really didn't like exercise, but he started doing Tai Chi and he liked it so much that he started teaching other people at his retirement center. He said, I'm not their teacher, I'm just showing them what I do. And he embraced it. And then he was able to start golfing again because he did Tai Chi. And that was very, to me, it's just a gift for me to be able to offer this to give this to the veterans.
And the veterans that we're going to talk with have felt the benefits in many different arenas of their health, mental health and physical health. As you started teaching veterans, were you surprised by the benefits you were seeing?
Yeah, I think I was surprised, but also because it's been a practice for me for so long, I've been doing this for a really long time. I always let each person, it's going to grow within them for what they need, whether it's mental, physical, spiritual, and each person embodies that. That's what I've seen. So,
well, Lori, stick with us, but I want to bring somebody else into the conversation now. Jerry Schindler is a veteran. He was a combat medic with an infantry unit in Vietnam. He's been practicing Tai Chi for 2 years now, and he lives in Marion, and he's here with us today. Hello, Jerry.
Hello, Jared.
So when you first heard about the opportunity to take a Tai Chi class, tell me what your reaction was.
I thought it was a good idea. I would try it. I was having a little bit of balance trouble. And as well, I had a diagnosis already of PTSD. It's just a stress reaction to various close quarters stimuli. So
sure. When you started doing Tai Chi, what was your reaction in those early weeks? How did you feel about the practice?
Well, I wasn't so sure that it was going to be that beneficial, but as I went along with the program, I saw the benefits. Initially, I thought, okay, we're going to do a bunch of Chinese yoga. So
you were maybe a little bit skeptical.
I was a little bit, yeah.
All right. And there was a turning point for you. Now
yes.
You are dedicated to this practice. Tell me about that turning point.
Well, the turning point clearly was for me when I was diagnosed with an autoimmune problem called myasthenia gravis, and it completely debilitates your connection between your nerves and your muscles. As a result, you fall down a lot.
Wow.
And so I needed something that would rehabilitate my body. I was in perfect shape last summer when this hit me, and I nearly drowned in a swimming pool, and I'm an avid swimmer, and it completely paralyzed my legs and my hands, and I couldn't do very little, so I had to be rescued. I'd never been rescued from a pool before.
You rescue other people.
I did, in war, yeah.
Yeah, so In treating this disorder, this was really devastating.
Yes,
in some ways, I can think maybe Tai Chi would be the last thing on your mind when when your muscles were so weak. What made you turn to Tai Chi as a way of getting through this?
Well, I was told, and again encouraged by my dietitian at the time, Lori Schreier. She said, this will strengthen your body, and you can get back into it, and you give it a lot of emphasis, and it'll help your balance, and it'll help your muscle strengthen your legs, and maybe we'll get you back on your feet. So she was more than a dietitian. She was a bit of a counselor to me.
Yeah. So how has it helped you in recovering from this disorder?
Well, I have gradually seen incrementally a strengthening of my knees and my legs, and especially the lower legs. I have neuropathy in my feet, which developed shortly after this, total neuropathy. I can't feel the ground. But the Tai Chi has helped me regain balance. It also helps me to be in a calm state of mood. When I get my mind or I engulf the moment, you know, then I lose the hostile thoughts that run around in my head. And so this has been a very relaxing thing. When I get a moment where I feel angry, I will do some of my Tai Chi, and I'll do my deep breathing, and I feel a whole lot better.
Wow. How often do you practice now?
Well, I do it throughout the day. I wake my body up with pats and everything up and down my body, and then I do the same relaxing thing just before I go to bed. But during the day, if I'm outside or doing something, or if I'm in line at Walmart and waiting to get checked out, I will do some of my various moves. A lot of people look at me, oh, that guy's crazy, you know. but I will do, and especially if I feel any weakness in the leg, I will go into my 70-30, which is where one foot's forward and then the back foot is tipped out at about 20 degrees. And I can rock back and forth on that. And it's the most stable stance you could get. It's almost a fighter stance, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very stable, and you feel comfortable with that. So
wow. So for you, this feels like it's really been a lifesaver.
I think it has helped me a lot. I'll say that for sure. And so I incorporated into the many programs which the VA has been giving me, but I'm very pleased with the medical treatment that I received there. So,
yeah, have you become an advocate for other people to get involved? Do you tell all of your friends?
I have told a lot of my friends about it, and some have followed my advice and have gotten involved. They often ask me about my weight loss, and I was in the MOVE program where I succeeded in losing over 100 pounds.
Wow.
And so I had my name I had my picture on a paper that was mounted to the walls. I guess I was the poster child for the MOVE movement for a while.
That's fantastic. Well, Jerry Schindler, thank you so much for sharing your
story. Well, thank you, Charity.
And before we go to a break, Lori, I want to ask you, Jerry came into this class with some real physical challenges. And I can think a lot of people probably would think, well, if I have those kind of physical challenges, Tai Chi is not for me. Tell me why you think even people who are not going to be able to do the moves, at least at first, should give this a try.
Well, Tai Chi can actually be adapted to people with all abilities. So you can start Tai Chi seated in a chair and by working on your posture and gentle movements. And so it can be adapted. And even people that are in the hospital, you can do just even gentle breathing, gentle movement when you're lying down. So it can be adapted. And a lot of programs are now creating very simplified forms using all the principles, but doing it in a way that you can adapt it. So anybody can start out in a chair, and then you can gradually progress. And if you're fatigued, you start on a chair, you stand up for a while, and then you sit back down. So you can do it side support, with a walker in your chair, and then standing, so you can progress and move at your own level, you know, working with a teacher that's experienced with modifying for you.
About how many veterans do you work with now?
I'm working with between 50 and 70 veterans. I teach about 7 classes a week right now.
Well, thank you for sharing your experience with us, Lori Enloe, a physical therapist and Tai Chi instructor with the Iowa City VA Hospital. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
We'll continue our conversation about Tai Chi and the benefits that it can provide for veterans. We'll meet a couple of other veterans who've embraced the practice. And in a little while, Tricia Yu, she's the woman behind much of this Tai Chi movement with veterans.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. With 6 race events, including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll explore the growing world of esports with teams starting up in high schools around the state. Right now, we're talking about Tai Chi and how this ancient Chinese practice is helping veterans. And with me now are a couple of other veterans who've embraced this practice. Paul Ramirez is here. He was a combat medic with the Iowa National Guard from 1981 to 2013. He started his Tai Chi practice last February. He lives in Belle Plaine, but came into the studio today. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure.
Take me back to last February when you had the opportunity to get involved with Tai Chi. What were some of the challenges that you were facing?
Well, I originally started Tai Chi so that I could see some relief in my... I have arthritis in my knees. I've had a couple of different surgeries, and so I really only came to get some flexibility back in my knees.
All right. But you have found significantly more than that in this practice.
It's been an amazing thing. It's really given me back my life. I was diagnosed with PTSD. I've been treated for traumatic brain injury. So I had a lot of confusion, a lot of memory issues and things like that. Had a lot of nightmares. And since I've started Tai Chi, I've been able to focus on everything in my life. I've stopped having nightmares. I think it's been 3 months since I've had a nightmare, which before it was a matter of I couldn't remember 3 or 4 days since I had one. And so it's been a total change for me in my life.
That's incredible. When you first started practicing, like you said, you were hoping for some relief with your knee pain. When did you start to notice that this was making a difference in other parts of your life too?
It was actually probably the first couple of weeks. When I first started out, I was kind of half-heartedly doing my Tai Chi.
I'll go through the motions,
right? Yeah. Exactly. And once I spent a couple of weekends that was all I did was practice, and I started to realize that it helped me focus a little bit more. It helped me internalize my thoughts a little bit more, and that has been probably the biggest help in the whole thing.
And you've also just really fallen in love with this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you find yourself wanting more information and learning more about the philosophy behind Tai Chi?
I've dabbled in the Taoist philosophies and things. It's been it's very intriguing to me. And it was Lori's teachings that really led me towards that. She would tell us not to judge ourselves. If we did something that wasn't quite the way it was supposed to happen, she told us, don't judge yourself, just keep moving forward. And it started teaching me to not judge myself, and it helped me not judge other people. And that's made a big difference in my life as well.
Has it made a difference for you socially? Do you find that it's changed how you interact with people?
Absolutely. I was always alert. Everywhere I went, I knew what was going on. I knew, and I was ready to react to anything that might happen. With Tai Chi, it's actually made me more aware and less alert. In calming me down, it's allowed me to talk to more people more readily, to open myself up a little bit more readily. People may not want to hear it, but
I do.
But socially it's made a big difference for me.
Oh, that's fascinating. And with this process, I mean, you talked about being nightmare free for about 3 months. I mean, that just sounds like such a radical change in your life. How would you characterize how it's changed your life?
I know no other way other than to say that it's given me my life back. I was controlling my life, but I wasn't in control. And it has changed so much for me, and it literally has given me my life back. And there's no way I could ever imagine being the person that I was before.
How often do you practice?
Usually 2 or 3 times a day. Throughout the day, Jerry had said, I'll just do little things here and there, but I have usually 2 formal practices a day. Very rarely do I miss a day anymore.
When things go wrong in your life and you feel some of those feelings coming back that you were struggling with, is this something you turn to help you cope?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It has a very strong calming effect. And I think it's because it brings you back into yourself, and it makes you focus on yourself, because we can't figure out the rest of our problems if we don't figure out ourselves first.
Has this made it possible for you to give up any of the medications that you were on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I was on methylphenidate for focus. I was on prazosin for nightmares, meprazole for stomach problems and things like that. And I'm hardly taking it. Well, most of it, I don't even take at all. I think I take a little bit of the prazosin still, but that's about it. Wow. And I'm on a quarter of the dose that I was on before this.
Do you do any other kinds of exercise?
Really? No. I work on motorcycles, and so I work on things in my garage. But no, really, I don't do any other form of exercise other than this.
Wow. Well, Paul, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Well, thank you for having me.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Like it's been a remarkable experience. Paul Ramirez was a combat medic with the Iowa National Guard from 1981 to 2013. He's been practicing Tai Chi since last February. And with me now is Jody Johnson. She served in the Navy, and she now lives in Oakville, Iowa. Jody, welcome.
Thank you.
And you've been practicing Tai Chi for 3 years. Tell me what drew you to the practice.
I was in the MOVE program, and they were all talking about the Tai Chi.
So it was the other veterans saying,
right,
you've got to try this out.
And I'm glad I did.
You came into the program with some serious physical challenges. Yeah. So Lori was talking about how Tai Chi can be modified for people with some of these physical challenges. You are a stroke survivor. So
yes.
Tell me how Tai Chi practice has been possible for you.
I'm Tai Chi one arm, and has gave me balance. I have a lot more balance and more sturdy on my feet. Keeps me focused.
Yeah.
Less stress.
Nice. And again, you went into this hoping for physical benefits.
Right.
But you also have found more than just the physical benefits. Tell me a little bit about that.
I'm off my anxiety meds. I am off my migraine medicine, and they cut my asthma medicine in half.
Wow, that's incredible. How often do you practice?
I practice every single day. I get up every morning at 4 a.m., and I practice for a half an hour.
Is this something you do alone at home?
Yes, I do it. I do it with the DVD every morning.
So you can follow a DVD.
Yep.
When you started, you were doing classes at the hospital?
Right, at the VA. Yes.
All right. How is it different to practice by yourself?
It's I can stay in focus, and it stays stress-free. I can breathe. I can do a lot. But the class really helps a lot.
Yeah.
It keeps you more in.
Right. Someone to follow. And
right.
And
so much easier to
do what they say. When you find yourself in moments where you're feeling anxious, is this something that you turn to in those moments, as Jerry and Paul were talking about?
Yes, I do. Especially the deep breathing and do some of the basic moves.
That's great. Well, thank you, Jody, so much for sharing your story with us today.
You're welcome.
Jody Johnson served in the Navy. She now lives in Oakville, Iowa. She's been practicing Tai Chi for 3 years and has found a lot of relief from her physical challenges, migraines, her anxiety. And next, I want to bring Tricia Yu into the conversation. She is the woman behind much of the Tai Chi movement with veterans in the United States. She's the former director of the Tai Chi Center in Madison, Wisconsin, the present owner of Tai Chi Health. She provides instructor training and certification nationally. And she's with us on the phone today from New Mexico. Hello, Tricia.
Hi. Oh, I've just loved hearing these stories from Jody and Paul and Jerry.
Yeah,
wow.
Really incredible stories. And Tricia, tell me how you got started in Tai Chi.
Okay, well, it was a very long time ago. It was in 1970, and I lived in Taiwan and learned Tai Chi in a very traditional way with a traditional master. And the traditional way of learning, unlike the way that we teach it now, is there's no talking. So I just followed along for about 6 months. And then once, you know, I was practicing and showing up and making improvement, then the teacher actually would say something to me. And so, anyway, I fell in love with it from the first day. There's something about that's so unique about being silent and with other people and then moving as you're focusing together. And it's an incredible experience, and I just took it with me ever since.
How long have you been a Tai Chi instructor?
Since 1972. So, you know, I'm going on 48 years, I think, now. 47. Long time.
Yeah, in introducing Tai Chi to people in the United States, it's a movement that we've seen grow over the decades. But when you first started teaching in the U.S., what were people's reactions?
Well, I was in Madison, Wisconsin, you know, and there was an incredible outreach. 150 people were studying with me within 6 months. It was just the right timing. I was there in 1974. And so in certain pockets in the United States, it became very popular. And it was very popular with very, very young people. And then over the years, as more and more research has shown the incredible benefits that it has in so many areas of life, the population has shifted. And now we're teaching people of all ages.
Tai Chi has not caught on quite like yoga in the United States. Why do you think that Tai Chi hasn't taken off the way that yoga has?
There's a couple of things. I think the main one is, and yoga is a wonderful exercise, and I think that they're a great combination. But you learn these different poses in yoga, and you can just show up in class, but you don't have to practice in order to, quote, keep up. Whereas in Tai Chi, you're learning, kind of an amazing transformational process as you're learning a sequence of movements. And what happens with so many people, they'll love Tai Chi to start with, and then they'll get lost. They didn't practice and they get behind. And so I think that is the main reason. And then the other is that Tai Chi is traditionally, it's based in the martial arts. And so it has that overlay in many, many places that it's taught. Whereas yoga is very straightforward, a health exercise.
When did you?
I love them both, and I think they go together very well.
When did you first start interacting with healthcare professionals and instructing healthcare professionals?
In 1980, and this, by the way, in the 1980s, to go back there, officially, according to, they said 90% of the doctors, they did not think that there was a mind-body connection. So it's almost like a different era that we started. And I collaborated with an occupational therapist using medically recommended range of motion exercises for arthritis and created a program called the ROMDAP, in which we developed a program using Tai Chi principles, not Tai Chi movement, but some of the Tai Chi principles that Jerry and Paul and Jody have been talking about, which are diaphragmatic breathing. Be aware of your breathing and your posture, and relax and move slowly and move mindfully. And so those principles were integrated into that program, and that's when I began to teach health professionals with this program, which was actually a medical model program.
And you encountered Lori Enloe, who we were talking to earlier, in 2000. You were her instructor. And how long does it take for someone to get certified to teach this to their students and the patients that they work with?
Well, first of all, meeting Lori was wonderful. Lori is a physical therapist and has also had well over a decade of traditional Tai Chi experience before she did this. So she was able to learn what I have developed since, two different programs. They're called the Tai Chi Fundamentals Original Program, which is done standing and is simplified from the traditional form, and then also the Tai Chi Fundamentals Adapted Program, which has been adapted so that you can have a chair by your side to touch for balance, or it can be done seated or with a walker. And, I'm not sure how long it took her, but I think that many people who take these programs now, it takes them at least 6 months to learn it. And then we have it's a simplified program, but we have a fairly rigorous certification program. They need to know the material cold and be able to demonstrate it and teach it, and also take a written exam.
When did you start working with veterans and with the military?
I am trying to think when the first veteran started becoming interested in this, or the VA hospitals, but definitely in 2000 in Madison at the VA hospital there, I had a student who was an OT who started teaching the Tai Chi fundamentals to her vets for the wellness classes. And then there was another grant to the Milwaukee VA where they studied how you could integrate the program into the programs that are offered to the vets. And so that was, the first was 2000, and I think the second was around 2010 or 2011, and it seems like since then, more and more VAs have been contacting us.
Well, with results like the veterans we've been talking to today report, it's not a surprise. But were you surprised by how effective, how powerful this has seemed to be for veterans?
Well, I can't tell you. It just brings tears to my eyes. And even talking about it right now, just to know that this process that is accessible to anybody, to everybody, you know, whether or not you're strong and flexible, you know, whatever your condition, you can have tremendous benefits from this. And to see this and to hear these stories just is just amazing. It's beautiful, and it's absolutely thrilling.
Tai Chi is not as universally available as yoga, like we were talking about before. If someone's interested in trying it out, how do you recommend people get started?
Well, of course, we have a bias that we think the Tai Chi Fundamentals programs are really good. And so you can, you know, check with Lori or, you know, our website is Tai Chi Health. But also in your own community, I would, you know, check at your VA hospital, at a Y, at a senior center, at a community center. It's actually offered more and more and more.
Well,
just because the research is so amazing.
We are out of time, Tricia, but thank you so much for talking with me. Tricia Yu, owner of Tai Chi Health.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. As school starts around the state, many student athletes are preparing for their seasons. And this year, a number of those athletes will be letting their brains and thumbs do all the work. Esports, competitive video gaming, is on the rise. Later this hour, I'll talk with a coach of a new esports team in Waterloo. But we're going to start where it began in Iowa, at Waco High School, a rural district in southeastern Iowa. The high school is in Wayland. And Joe Edeker was one of the founding members of the esports group at Waco High School. He is a recent graduate. He's planning to become a computer engineer. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here. And let's go back in time to, a couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
Tell me how this got started.
So it basically started as a lot of people were just playing in the lab one day.
Hanging out in the computer lab at school,
Lab. And we decided that we wanted to, build a team. So we had about 8 of us. And we were looking at the games that we could actually play because the computers in our computer lab were super old. So it was basically down to League of Legends and a couple other games. So that went on for a couple months. And then we started talking to our teacher about what we could do to get new computers, get a grant. And then that's how it kind of started. And then we worked on that.
And when you decided that you were going to try to get a grant to get new computers, was the idea already there that you would be a competitive team?
I think the most idea was just to hang out and figure out how this is going to work out and just take it as it comes.
Okay. So when did the idea of becoming a competitive team come into this?
That came into maybe the end of the first year, mostly into the second year. And that's where we're looking at setting up tournaments. From my direct friend group, there was about 4 people, but then there was also other people that wanted to do. And so So it was 8 of us. Once we got the new computer lab, we had a lot more people interested.
I'll bet. So when you were playing with your friends and playing these different games, you were also coaching each other. Tell me about that.
So it was this really interesting situation where you don't have your standard coach. So each of us would basically come up with our own ideas and share that with other people. And that's how we'd coach ourselves. So, we would watch videos together. That was one thing. But then we'd also make PowerPoints, and we'd share those and talk about those.
Okay, so you'd actually, do a formal presentation, say, hey, this is how you get through this game. This is how you get better.
Yep.
All right. Do you remember the first time you actually got a tournament together, the first time you competed as a team?
So most of the tournaments that we did for Fortnite. So our team didn't really, well, they did play in those, but they didn't play as a team. So I think we went to Burlington at the end of a year, and then we actually got to compete, and that was really cool.
What do you think you got out of this experience? I mean, you had a lot of fun with your friends, but what do you think you gained from doing esports when you were in high school?
I thought it brought about like a lot of like skills that you need to talk to other people and work together, and like time management too. That was a big deal.
Were you doing any other sports, more traditional sports?
So I was doing cross country and track, and then a couple other of them were doing basketball and football as well. The main difference is that it's more on you to define what success is. Like in basketball, you want a winning season or go to the finals, but in esports, it's a lot different. It's there's not a ton of high schools that you can compete directly with. So it's more difficult to define what success is.
Okay. So you were competing against yourself in some ways there, yeah, trying to improve your performance. Tell me about the camaraderie. Did it feel simple or similar to hanging out with your friends from cross country?
Well, cross country itself is usually a smaller group. So there's a lot more, I think, than some sports. But I felt like I was really close to these guys at the end of it, and we've been through a lot, and we had a lot of experiences just that we shared together.
When you hear about all of these other high schools in Iowa starting esports teams, and they're starting to pop up all over the state now, how do you feel about that?
I feel like it's really cool that it's a different way to get involved. Just like we have sports and music and drama, why not add video games to that?
Where do you see esports going in the future?
Right now, it's already a somewhat viable career for like a certain percentage of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a big part of entertainment, but I don't know how many people that'll actually reach.
When you think about your future, do you think you'll continue to compete in esports when you go through college and later on in life?
So I'm at a position where I don't think I started early enough to actually compete at a college level. So I think I would just be person cheering on my team and seeing what they're doing, maybe checking out what they're doing.
Yeah. So more something you can do for fun. You feel like you have to specialize early in esports to be that competitive now?
I do feel like one of the people who actually had a chance was like committed over 1,000 hours in Rocket League. And they probably had a chance at competing at a college level. But I don't think realistically anyone else had a chance.
Do you think that you really honed computer skills through this? I know that you plan to become a computer engineer. Do you think that all of this gaming and working on setting up the lab and figuring out the bugs when you were trying to get games to work, things like that, do you think that that helped you?
I think that helped me. It helped me get really excited about computers and like learn how to put them together and try to problem solve. So that was really helpful.
All right. Joe, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
All right. Thank you.
Joe Edeker was one of the founding members of the esports group at Waco High School in Wayland. Drew Arrett is the esports coach at Waco High School. He's on the line with me now. Hi, Drew.
Hi, Shirley. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. Now, it sounds like this was really a student-led idea, but of course they needed a little bit of help from you. When you got involved and started writing grants to get new computers and things like that, did you meet any resistance from the school district?
You know, a lot of people ask me that question, and that really wasn't the case in my situation. I brought the idea to my administration at the time, you know, principal, superintendent, and they were nothing but supportive the entire time throughout the whole process. And administration has changed since we began that grant writing process, but our new administration as well is on board. You know, at Waco, we're trying to do innovative things, and we're always thinking of how we can bring more opportunities to our students, and pretty much everybody that's been involved can see that it does offer opportunities to students, and those opportunities are only going to grow in the future.
How many kids are involved these days?
At the end, I would say at the end of last year, if you think about total participation throughout the year of people that consistently were involved, I'd say our numbers were probably around 20 students.
Do you see this as an equivalent to an athletic team?
You know, that's an interesting question. In my mind, that's where we want to get to. I'd say at this point in time, I wouldn't consider us an equivalent of an athletic team, but that's the direction we're moving towards. So we're kind of on this spectrum of club and then an official team, and the infrastructure just isn't quite there yet to be considered an official team, but there are lots of things happening in the state to where I really think that this year we're going to set the foundation to become for esports to be considered an official athletic event, and I think next year that infrastructure is going to be pretty much in place.
Is there a technical challenge for you and for other schools who want to get involved in this? I mean, Joe was talking about needing new computers and things like that, but you know, when you're talking about actually having a tournament and the kind of networking power you need for that, is that challenging?
Absolutely. There are, you know, when anytime you're the first at doing something, and, you know, I don't know if we could absolutely make the claim that we are the first school in Iowa. I think we're the first school to kind of build an arena around it. But anytime you're doing something first, there's going to be issues that pop up. And, you know, we all use technology in our everyday lives, and it's great, but it also comes with a learning curve. So we're at a point where I think we've got a fairly well-developed system to keep things going. But yeah, you do need a lot of bandwidth with your internet speeds to make sure, you know, because that's an advantage. If your players are lagging, they're at a severe disadvantage when they're in a match. So you really do want to have the right equipment and internet capacity to be able to do this. I think most schools probably have the internet capacity at this point in time. And from the other esports coordinators, coaches that I've talked to, it's a matter of getting enough hardware that they can build a team.
And when you do a tournament, do you physically travel to be together, or is this something that you do from your location?
At this point in time, we've run several cross-district tournaments in our esports arena where we've invited other schools to come in. I think our last Fortnite tournament, we had maybe 8 or 9 schools represented by students from those areas. And then the other tournament that we participated in that Joe was speaking about in his interview, the League of Legends tournament, we did at an esports, kind of a for-profit esports arena over in the Quad City area. So we actually traveled as a team, and the other teams traveled there as well. That being said, I do think there is quite a lot of opportunity for remote play, and that would make it maybe more accessible to more people. And the organization that I'm working with and helping to develop, which is the Iowa High School Esports Association, we will be doing all of that play remotely.
How do you decide what games you're going to play?
Most of it is based on industry standards. So pretty much, we look at what games, is there a future, is there future opportunity for students, and then those are the games that we're trying to focus on. So pretty much any esport that's represented and has, you know, that you're starting to see college teams for, or that you hear a lot of maybe professional, about professional play, those are the games that we're looking at. So for example, big ones would be League of Legends, Overwatch, and Rocket League would be some of the big titles that we're focusing on.
Well, Drew, thank you so much for talking with me today, and good luck with your next season. It sounds like we're going to be hearing a whole lot more about esports in the future.
I really hope so, and I do really appreciate the opportunity to come on the show and share the exciting things that we're doing here at Waco.
Drew Arrett is the esports coach at Waco High School. He's also involved in really getting the Iowa High School Esports Association off the ground. Next, we've got Kyle Cooler with us. He's also an esports coach and is part of a newer program in Waterloo dating back just to last January. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you for being here. And you're based at the Waterloo Career Center. So tell me about the students you're working with and where they're coming from.
We have students from several different high schools that take courses at the Career Center. And so if they have a course out there, then they can participate in the esports. As you mentioned, we just started up here, played our first season in January. And so it's pretty exciting.
How many kids did you have involved for that first season?
We had, it was divided into two separate, in the league that we played in, which is called highschoolesportsleague.com, HSEL. There was a spring league and a spring major and a winter open. And so we had about 10, 15 kids in the winter open. And then in the spring major, we had, I believe, 23 students participate.
Wow. And this is a before school activity? Am I right about that?
This is after school.
Oh, okay.
And then anytime that there's not school. And so it's really created some excitement with the students in that when there's professional development days or days that they don't have school, they want to have what's called LAN parties, which is just where they come in with all their friends and just kind of play the different games and use it as practice. And
okay.
So they can, when we play our matches, I was just listening to Drew here, and when we play our matches, sometimes we'll have a combination of students that are online and playing at the Career Center. Sometimes they'll play online, all online, and that sort of stuff. And so in our league, the students have a weekly match. They're paired up with another school from usually in the Midwest, but it could be from anywhere in the nation. And then they play for 8 weeks.
Wow. Well, I have a note that you have some kids showing up at 7 a.m. So some kids really get into this and they're willing to get up early and get a start on it, huh?
Yeah. On professional development days, there will be, 7 a.m., 8 o'clock. They'll say, hey, what's the earliest we can be there? And they'll be there and they're excited. And it's really helped, too, with some students with the attendance and just being excited about school because they have to do well in school. Because we have a leadership team, a student leadership team that we've put together. And then there's some GPA requirements, some minimal requirements that students have to meet. And so it's really helped to create some excitement around school and kind of leverage the video games and with the school.
Do you feel like this esports team is equivalent of another athletic team, or is it more like a club?
Right now at the Career Center, we're kind of treating it as a club. It is in my opinion, it is a sport. If you go to ESPN.com, there's a tab on there for esports now. The National High School Athletic Federation has adopted it as a high school sport. It's under the tab that says other, along that with like bowling is another sport that's on that same tab. But students are, it is, I would consider it a sport. We had four students that earned scholarships at Hawkeye Community College. I believe this last year there was 8 colleges in Iowa that gave out scholarship money to students for their esports teams. So it is a sport.
All right. And this seems like it's growing fast. Where do you see the future going? And in just 15 seconds.
I see the future. It's really kind of exploding. And so I see the future it's getting more and more popular and just making sure that we find ways to leverage it for our classrooms also.
All right. Kyle Cooler, thank you.
Thank you.
Kyle Cooler is an esports coach with the Career Center in the Waterloo School District. We've been talking about esports, which seem to be taking off all around the state of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.